Good morning, Skrull Nation. This is Skrull Radio on Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. And for this hour, your connection to the world of writing and peer writing tutoring. This is brought to you by the University Center for Writing-Based Learning, otherwise affectionately known as the UQIBLE. And you can find us on depaul.edu/writing. I'm your host, Mariah Wolfel, here with my co-host, Ryan McQueenie.
Hello.
We are both peer writing tutors at the University Center for Writing-Based Learning. And this week, we are here to talk about banned books, which is specifically important to the Writing Center because at the Writing Center, we have core beliefs. And one of them is writing facilitates knowledge and creativity. And so part of that is information and information sharing. And this week, it's a nationwide holiday for a week long called Banned Books Week. And Banned Books Week celebrates the, well, it doesn't celebrate it. It protests banned books throughout schools throughout the nation. So we're here with two guests who can speak to this topic, James Neeson and Andrew Ray.
Hi, thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So James is the director of the outreach team at DePaul's Writing Center.
I am, yes. And I was thinking about it, and including last year appearances, I think this is actually my fifth appearance on Skrull. So if there was like a five-timers club, like in Saturday Night Live, I would get to be a member now.
We'll get you a pin on the way out.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
We have a fifth visit pin, I think.
Yeah, you're totally in the club.
It's already happened.
And Andrew Ray is with the DePaul Library. He's a librarian, and he is the curator of the Banned Books Week exhibit that's been going on all week.
I am. Thank you guys for having me here.
Yeah. Andrew, could you tell us a little bit about your history as a librarian and your educational experience?
Sure. Well, I was an undergraduate English and English writing double major at a small liberal arts college in Western Illinois called Knox. And after a couple of years trying to brave the world of the writer, I decided that maybe I would go back to grad school to be a librarian.
Food is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, food is good. Clothing is good, all of that stuff. And so after, friends of mine had become librarians. Mm. And I was like, I'm never going to become a librarian. But finally, I realized that it was really the only way for me to make any money. Herman Melville didn't have an MFA. So... So I went and got my degree in library science and have worked in the Chicago area at both University of Chicago and now at DePaul for the past 4 years.
Something I learned today from Andrew is that there is such a thing as library school.
There is library school.
I just wasn't aware that you had to go, that there was like a master's degree programs in library
PhD.
Science.
It's more of a degree offered at schools.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like one huge building in the middle of the field everyone who's a librarian goes to.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a library school.
It's not Monsters University.
Yeah.
I wish it were. I would still be there if that were the case.
So we're really excited to talk to Andrew and James about banned books. And then later on the show, we're going to have another outreach coordinator, Avery, come in and talk about what the DePaul Writing Center does for Banned Books Week. But before that, Ryan is going to introduce our favorite segment on Skrull Radio, Word of the Day.
Word of the Day. Okay, so I just realized that the paper with Word of the Day is pretty readable to a couple of the,
people in the studio.
So I know everyone likes to win.
A hug from Ryan, which is the prize.
Yeah, a hug from me. I don't know if I ever gave Vince his hug last week, because he won.
Oh, you owe him an extra big hug.
I'll have to remember that the next time I see him. But today, the word is largiloquent.
Ooh, I like that word.
Andrew, you look like you know this word already. We have a librarian in the studio.
I honestly have no clue.
Okay,
it's largiloquent.
It's an adjective.
Hmm. Can you spell that for us?
L-A-R-G-I-L-O-Q-U-E-N-T.
Largiloquent. All right. So as maybe some of our listeners from last week know, we've changed the Word of the Day segment to where we don't reveal it until the end of the show.
Until the very end.
So all of you listeners can start brainstorming. Text in if you can. You can text your guest to 773-325-7341. And us here in the studio are going to be brainstorming it throughout this interview, commercial breaks, and our next segment as well.
I'll be dropping some hints sporadically.
All right. So, Andrew, what is a banned book?
Well, a banned book is a book that is out of circulation, essentially. It's been censored. It's been removed from circulation, either restricted for age or restricted for content or completely removed. Now, it's important to mention that no book in the United States has ever been nationally banned. That's what our First Amendment right guarantees us. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about banned books in libraries and in schools, what we're really talking about are books that have been locally banned or challenged. More often than not, they're simply challenged. Most challenges don't result in bans. And if they do result in bans, oftentimes those bans are fairly short in nature. So from a couple days to a couple years is generally what we're talking about.
So that, to me, sounds sort of arbitrary, the process of banning a book, because you can't technically nationwide ban reading material. So how do schools get around that, our First Amendment right?
Well, under the auspices of appropriateness, okay, is generally what
you had to protect the children.
Yeah, more or less. That's what it is. And most bans do come from school libraries, though the public library system also sees, you know, a lot of challenges to materials. And local entities can ban materials or can remove those materials from their collection. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to say that Chicago Public Library has to have a book in their collection. You know, every library has a collection plan. All librarians make decisions based on that plan as to what they're going to add to their collections. So if you don't want a book in your collection, you don't have to have it there. But again and again, the ACLU and other groups generally will fight against those bans and win because it is often found to be a violation of First Amendment rights.
Gotcha.
I want to go back to that. I think you used the phrase appropriateness, mm-hmm, or under that kind, yeah, of flag is why, you know, people would make these challenges. What you know, I guess, what is that criteria? How do you define appropriateness? What kind of content is it typically that results in a challenge?
Well, that's a really good question because there isn't one. There are no criteria. Appropriateness, age appropriate or otherwise, is generally a term that's couched within sort of values and morals. And so it's very difficult when you're talking about children, especially, to define kind of what's appropriate for a given age, whether it's grade school, middle school, high school, whatever. But the idea of something being appropriate is generally decided by the educator, the teacher, or the librarian at a library. And those that often try to limit access to materials, ban them, challenge them, are going to be parents, are going to be school boards, are going to be concerned citizens of the community if it's a public library. And the American Library Association sort of takes the tack that, well, they don't necessarily know what's age appropriate. Mm-hmm. You can certainly decide for your own child what's appropriate for them to encounter. And you have the right to ask a teacher not to let that student read a book for an assignment. What you don't have the right to do is limit other children's right to access that material. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the stance that the ALA takes and the stance that I think most libraries and librarians tend to take.
That's really interesting.
Do we see a certain sort of trend in the types of subject matter that are banned more so than others?
You always have the sort of the big three, And they're always on the increase because that's seemingly just what people care about. And it's sex, violence, and language. And, you know, while I believe the statistics are that challenges have gone down over the past decade, as compared to, you know, the 90s, we still see significant increases in the amount of challenges for language and sex. Those seem to be the big ones. But there's also, and I think it's important to mention, because I think when people think about censorship and banning materials, it comes from a particular part of the political spectrum. But since the 1990s, there's been a large increase in banning materials that are culturally insensitive. Mm. And so a specific example of that would be like Huckleberry Finn.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. The use of racial language in Huckleberry Finn has caused it to be one of the most banned books in the United States now for going on 20 years. And they've gone so far as to creating an edition that removes that language, that replaces, you know, the N-word with slave, for example. Most recently, it was banned for the way it talks about Native Americans. Mm. So this trend of sort of, for lack of a better word, PC policing,
mm-hmm.
Also sort of takes a toll when we're talking about the free access to literature and information.
James, I want to go back to you briefly. You know, coming from the perspective of someone who works in a writing center, and I know you also do or have studied creative writing in your time.
Mm-hmm.
From that writer's perspective, I guess, why is it important to care about this type of stuff? I mean, obviously the idea of just kind of stifling creativity, but, you know, why should we as writers really be concerned?
So I think that when I think back to a lot of writers who have meant a great deal to me personally, a lot of them are on the list that we've kind of looked at. So I'm from Southern Indiana, and Kurt Vonnegut was a huge influence on me from a very young age. And Slaughterhouse-Five, I think, is a very frequently challenged
yes,
book. So
absolutely.
For me, the amount of sort of depth that I get out of most of these works vastly outweighs any sort of problems that they might arise, you know, that might arise with them. So, you know, with the example of Huck Finn that we were just talking about, I think the whole the sort of arc of the novel is all getting Huck to realize some of the problems of the things that are, you know, people challenge it for. So it's interesting to me to think about how are you supposed to talk about sensitive issues without depicting them. Mm-hmm. It seems somewhat impossible. So then you can either just like completely ignore the issue, which I don't think is a very viable option, or you can attempt to depict them in a way that is sensitive or legitimate. You know what I mean? That is actually aware of the difficulties involved in representation.
And that was particularly interesting to me. I want to ask, what are the benefits and disadvantages of censoring a book like Huck Finn, replacing the N-word with slave? Does that diminish the historical relevance of that word?
And could there actually be any value to that? I mean, obviously the people making those decisions would think that there is. So,
well, I can only speak from a sort of, you know, a library perspective. I would imagine that the, for lack of a better word, censored version of the Huck Finn, the retextualized version of Huck Finn, would be a book that would probably be much more easily taught in a classroom or circulated in a public library. So if one is being pragmatic about this, is it better to interact with that text, period, than interact with it in its original state? I don't know that I can answer that question because, you know, everybody's going to come to this with a different take on what's valuable about the experience. But from a collections perspective, it certainly wouldn't be something that we would want to collect as anything but a novelty, because the value of the book is the value of the information inside of the book. I think once you remove that, you start removing some of its intrinsic value and some of what it is meant over the, you know, roughly 150 years since it's been written.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I also think that if that is what happened at the time and then you fail to represent that, then you're sort of just like ignoring history in that way. And I'm not sure that that is the best way to go about things either.
Well, I think that's interesting. And I think that looking at a book like Huck Finn with this really important historical context is one thing. But I mean, contemporary modern books get challenged too. And correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I've seen on some of your promotional material, even like the Harry Potter books are ones that get challenged often too.
They're huge, hugely challenged. And the trend in recent years toward censorship in books has come almost squarely from the young adult or children's mm-hmm. side of the spectrum. And then I think just, it really reflects the changes in that particular area. Once you start having Lois Lowry and J.K. Rowling start publishing books that are making a lot of money and are getting a lot of readers, that attention comes to what's being talked about. So for Harry Potter, you know, whether it's anti-family values, you know, he doesn't have parents, to black magic angle, which is something that's much less of an issue than it used to be back in the 80s when you had, in the late 70s, when you had the satanic panic. Anti-Satanist stuff was really big, and you know, it's
no Dungeons and Dragons, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But the protest toward Harry Potter is a holdover of that, which, you know, the witches and the wizards like can't have those. That's anti-Christian. It's pro-pagan, pro-Satanist, whatever it might be.
Just for our listeners who may be just tuning in now, we are on air talking with Andrew Ray and James Neeson. James is from the outreach team from the DePaul Writing Center, and Andrew is a librarian at DePaul University, and we're talking about banned books. There's an extensive list of banned books on the Banned Books Week website. Some of them are Persepolis, The Bluest Eye, Perks of Being a Wallflower, A Stolen Life by J.C. Dugard. I'm going to ask you one more quick question before we're running out of sure. time. Why is it so important to unban these books?
Well, when we talk about unbanning books, you know, their natural state is to not be banned. So I think maybe a way to rethink this would be, how do we keep books out in the public sphere so that anyone who wants to access them can access them? And it's important because art is important. It's important because information is important. It's important because these things help us understand the world. They stimulate growth, conversation, intellectual honesty, and more or less the foundations of Western society and democracy.
Thank you so much for coming on, Andrew.
Thank you guys for having me.
We had Andrew pick our first song today, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. He did pick a song that we unfortunately couldn't play at 11:20 in the morning. The censored version was a little too censored, but...
Yeah, the original one was F the Police by N.W.A. The reason I picked it was because it's such a ridiculous censored version. Mm-hmm. You really can't hear much of the song because there's so much bleeping and blurring of the language. I think, you know, we came up with N.W.A. Fight the Power as a nice second to that. Mm-hmm. It's much more playable right now, but also, you know, it's got some of the same messaging there that, you know, we've got to keep things open, free, accessible. And to those who want to limit that, there will be a strong pushback.
That's right. Chuck D, also angry.
All right. Thank you again so much.
Thank you guys.
This is Scrawl Radio on Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. And this is Fight the Power by Public Enemy.
Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got soul. Hey, listen, if you're missing, y'all, swinging while I'm singing. Hey, giving what you're getting, knowing what I know in, while the black band's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want, gotta give us what we need. Hey, our freedom of speech.
trying to bounce with tells us that the rhyme designed to fill your mind. Now that you realize the prize arrives, we got the pump, the stuff to make you tough. From the heart, it's a start, a work of art to revolutionize, make a change, something strange. People, people, we all the same, no, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness, we can't get careless. You say, what is this? Our beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness, the rest is show.
You got to go for what you know.
To make everybody see, in order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. 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 We got to fight the powers that be. He's straight out racist. The sucker was simple and plain.
Motherfuck you mean, John Wayne?
Cause I'm black and I'm proud. I'm ready, I'm hyped, cause I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in no stamp. Sample, look back, you look and find nothing but rednecks for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one jam. Damn, if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on.
Come on.
What we got to say?
Yeah.
Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. We got to fight the powers that be.